DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Mary DeTouris Post, who is an author, columnist, journalist, speaker, and blogger who has written for dozens of Catholic and secular publications. She's the author of Walking Together, Everyday Divine, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Catholic Catechism, and Parenting a Grieving Child. She was a senior correspondent and contributing editor for Our Sunday Visitor newspaper for 14 years and is a daily contributor to the Our Sunday Visitor's popular blog, OSV Daily Take. With Mary DeTouris Post, we go inside the pages of Cravings, A Catholic Wrestles with Food, Self-Image, and God, published by Ave Maria Press. Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I love Cravings, A Catholic Wrestles with Food, Self-Image, and God. It's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. That really makes me feel good.
Well,
and whenever you put a book out there, you're always hoping that, you know, it hits a chord with people, strikes a chord, so I'm glad.
This is actually the book, I think, for many of us who have struggled with how to properly engage in that wrestling, as the title says, that we do with our self-image, but also with dieting and our obsession with food.
Yeah, and I think it does, it is, whether you're overweight or not, whether you're just right, I think many of us deal with that, with that issue on a regular basis or throughout our lives. And so I think that's why some people are finding it, you know, it's not a diet book. I think, like you're saying, some people see it and they think, maybe this is for someone with an eating disorder, or this is for somebody who has to lose a certain amount of weight. And it's not that. It's really kind of it's a book about our journey, really, our journey through life and our spiritual journey.
Anything that we do in life, we should 24/7 engage God in it. Isn't that essentially what St. Paul said, make your everything a prayer?
Right.
And that's what you've done with this, is that every activity, nothing's excluded from that relationship.
Right, and I think that's what's so important. As I often will say to people, if I'm speaking about this topic, anytime we go, if dieting like fasting or anything like that, if without prayer, it just becomes one more diet. And we know what happens with diets. They, even if they're successful for a while, we usually regain what we lost, or we kind of fall into these bad habits. Whereas prayer sort of transforms that; it turns it into something else, and it helps us get to kind of the bottom of what we're really hungry for, because often we're not hungry for cookies or chips, or, you know, I often will be, famous for saying, I have no time for prayer, I have no time to meditate, I have no time for Liturgy of the Hours, and then I get a half an hour, and instead of using the time that falls into my lap, you know, I find myself wandering upstairs since I work at home, and, you know, peering into the pantry and making a pot of coffee, because mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to settle down into prayer sometimes. So I think we do have a much deeper hunger, and we use food to kind of fill that void rather than doing some of the soul searching that would really, really satisfy us and really fill those deeper hungers.
And I think what your book does is it really helps us to take a new look, a totally different paradigm of our actions, and how can we bring our faith into it.
Yeah, and you know, for me it was almost, as I wrote this book, almost a deeper exploration of that topic. Like I'd had some connection to it. I talk about it in the book, about the fact that when I went on my first silent retreat, where I was also not allowed to read or write while on the retreat, which means you take away all my crutches. So if I'm not talking when I'm eating, I'm probably got a book in front of me, or I've got my laptop in front of me. With all of those crutches gone, it was just me and my corn chowder. You know, you really kind of have to, all of a sudden, it sort of transforms that meal, and you're at a different, it brings it into a different place. And so I was very much, you know, paying attention to what I was doing, to my surroundings, to how I was eating. Then I came home from that retreat and slipped right back into the old, like, make my oatmeal, get the crossword puzzle, had the laptop next to me, my phone in case someone called. And I realized after that silent retreat, wait a minute, my kids are at school, there's no reason why I have to be kind of so fragmented and doing a million things at once. I always say I want solitude and silence. Why am I making my meal so, you know, sort of frantic? And so I cleared everything away, and I lit a candle, and I really tried to make it this peaceful, prayerful meal. And over time that developed into, I think, one of my best prayer practices, which sounds kind of strange that my bowl of oatmeal could become that, but it really became this favorite time of the day for me because I would stop everything and really focus. And that was my first, I think, really deep connection to the idea of food and spirituality being so linked. And oftentimes what's going on in my spiritual life or not going on is very much connected to what's on my plate or what I'm looking for. So that was the beginning of that. And then this book really, for me, was a gift because it sort of forced me to go to new places and explore it for myself first.
Well, it sounds like you hit on a couple things just in what you shared with us. That first, it's taking time to be in the present moment. Mm-hmm. And not taking that for granted. But then there's also, and if anybody's ever served in a mission trip in a third world country or in an area where there is profound poverty, the appreciation of that gift of food, that meal really is, for so many people around the world, it is a blessing mm-hmm. from God. It is a gift. And in the United States, we've kind of lost that sense in some ways, haven't we, Mary?
We have, you know, it's so we can have anything we want in any season. You know, you can go into a grocery store and it doesn't matter what the season is outside. We could get anything, you know, whether it's tomatoes or strawberries or things that are totally out of our season. We can get as much of it as we want. And we do, everything is, you know, supersized and bigger. And so we do have that, you know, we've kind of lost that connection to our food. And you're right, in these other countries where even in countries where it's not necessarily third world, but where it's a different approach. I found it when I went to Rome, mm-hmm. a very different connection to the food. It was, I wanted these certain kind of artichokes when I was in Rome that I had my heart set on, and stuffed artichoke blossoms, I mean stuffed zucchini blossoms. Those mm-hmm. were the two things I wanted. And when I went into restaurants and asked, their reaction was, sorry, you know, it's not in season. And it reminds you that there are places where you can't just have everything you want exactly when you want it. It's supposed to move almost according to the rhythm of the natural world, and kind of, you know, it's more than about the food. It's about the company. It's about the feet, you know, sort of that real celebration of food, where ours, it's just eat standing up, eat in the car, eat at your desk. You know, the Italians for sure don't do that. I couldn't even get into many places at lunchtime because everything is closed down and they're eating and they're doing their thing. So I think we have gotten really far away from that. And I talk about how we can look to even to the monastics for a little guidance on that, because I say they're the original slow food, you know, eat local, eat in season, locavore kind of movement, because they've been doing that for centuries, you know, sort of eating according to the natural rhythms of the seasons, eating in moderation. You know, our church shows us that we feast and we fast. We don't feast all the time. So we can look to our church to sort of inform how we eat even at home, and that it should be there should be something sort of sacred about even those meals that we eat just around our own kitchen table.
You help guide us on that path to wholeness, and I mean that in holiness, in both its senses.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of it, is that, you know, we look at sometimes, I've got to work on my spiritual life, and that's separate from I've got to work on my exercise and my diet. And I'm really hoping that people will see this as the things all go together, that usually mm-hmm. if we're doing something in our physical life, there is a connection to what's going on either in our, you know, our work life, our spiritual life. We're stressed, and so we eat, or we're sad or lonely, or we want acceptance, and so maybe we eat. So there are those connections to it, and by sort of approaching it from a different way, you know, we can sort of find that wholeness. And I talk about the fact, you know, some people, when they first hear it, they're like, I don't get, you know, what's this connection between food and the Catholic faith? And, of course, you know, as you know, and your listeners probably won't be surprised, is that, well, our faith is centered on a meal, so it's not mm-hmm. really surprising that there's this strong connection between our food and food and faith. And we can see it not only through the Mass and the Eucharist, but, you know, you can look at the stories of the gospel, and Jesus is constantly sitting down to dinner with people, the first miracles at a feast, you know, there's the loaves and the fishes, there's the disciples recognizing him in the breaking of the bread. There's this constant recurrent theme of food sort of always being in the background or at the center of spiritual life. And so I try to talk to the readers about, you know, how do we go to Mass and how do we approach that meal? You know, we do it with reverence, we do it with care and quiet and a slowness. can we bring some of that into our domestic church and try to bring some of the sacred into the meals we make at home? And again, like you're saying, not just the eating, but everything that surrounds it, from the preparing it to the serving to even the cleaning up. Can we approach it from a different way, from a place of blessing and gratitude and reverence, as opposed to maybe frustration, like, oh, I got to cook another dinner, I got to clean up. It kind of it changes it when we look at it from that other place.
I do love, Mary, how the book is laid out. I think this makes great for private use, but it also makes great use for those groups who love to come to share and ponder and study mm-hmm. together.
Well, you know, I wanted to so much. I know when I read a book sometimes, if I simply read it, especially now that I'm 50 and I seem to be forgetting things more than I remember them. So if I read a book, I oftentimes will think, yes, I really love this idea. Yes, I'm going to incorporate this. And then I kind of move on and, you know, of course, I've moved on to the next thing and I forget. And so for me, I wanted to make a book that would have things in it that people could do, even if it's, like you're saying, to do it on their own or with a group, to answer the questions and sort of own some of those ideas and put them into practice and have a meditation that would make it more than just reading the book, but actually incorporating it into their lives and giving the appendix with some practical exercises. And I think, you know, especially for people who can do it with friends or with a group, that's even more helpful, because just like with exercise, you know, they'll tell you to have a buddy or something. It's similar, I think, with spiritual life and, of course, with dieting. If you have other people to support you who have the same thing that they're going with, then you support each other, and there's somebody there to talk to and kind of bounce things off of and encourage you when you're feeling like, you know, I don't know if I can do this. So I hope that people will use it in groups, too.
You have to deal with yourself, accepting and appreciating, not just accepting who you are, but appreciating how wonderful it is that God created you the way you are. And I think in your meditations and your guiding through that, that helps set the stage so that you can pursue a healthy relationship, should I say, with food.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes me glad that you feel that you're getting that from there, because that's what I was hoping for. And as I'll often say, you know, it's not like you read the book and you do the exercises and then, you know, okay, I'm done with that. And it really is, you know, this is a lifelong journey. So it's something that becomes part of your life for the long run and sort of helps you move along that path. And sometimes I'll say, because it's so easy to slip back into old habits, one of the people I interviewed even referred to it as like sort of that worn space in the carpet where you always walk. You know, you have that mm-hmm. habit of walking there all the time. And it's similar with our own habits in our life. You know, we kind of slip back into them when things get stressful or we get lazy about something. I find myself sometimes I'll sort of feel myself slipping back, skipping the meditative oatmeal or eating while I'm on the run, and I'll think, you know, I gotta reread my own book. So it's kind of a constant renewing of that, so that you are constantly moving forward. But the good news is that we're sort of always this work in progress. We don't have to achieve something in particular. It's not like you have to lose a certain amount of weight or achieve a certain level of fitness. It's that you're just accepting that you're loved by God just as you are exactly right now. And even if you do want to improve or you need to for your health, lose weight, that's okay. But you're starting from a place of understanding that you're a child of God and you're loved for exactly who you are at that moment.
And you really encourage us throughout the book to look at why are we doing what we're doing, and that everything is significant. It's not about somebody who is just, quote-unquote, overweight. It's also about that person who is denying themselves food. And what is it that, why are you treating yourself in a certain way or denying yourself a gift or a blessing? What's going on there? And allowing the Lord in to help you with that.
Yeah, because, you know, you're right. Like, I say in the book that, you know, I never had a serious weight problem other than when I lost the weight after I had my three children. You know, I maybe only wanted to lose 5 or 10 pounds at the most throughout different points of my life. But I've always had that sort of, you know, relationship with food where I love food. I can kind of consider myself a foodie. If, you know, if people go to my blog, Not Strictly Spiritual, they'll see every Friday I put up a food post. So I love to cook and I love to serve food. But almost that, always that guilt associated with, like, I shouldn't be eating this, or, you know, this is bad, you know, or why did I have that? Because, you know, this fear that somehow the scale is going to be 2 pounds more than I wanted it to be, and so that's going to mean I'm not as good a person as I, you know, that I had hoped to be. So it's definitely, a lot of the women especially that I talk to were not heavily, much overweight or not overweight at all, and yet they had the same sort of battle with food, where the food was sort of the enemy, that they had to constantly be on guard, and so you could never really truly enjoy yourself when you're eating a meal, because you're always worried about, you know, what's the scale going to say tomorrow. And it's kind of sad that we've let society really convince us that we have to be beautiful, we have to be a certain weight and a certain, you know, have a certain look and be able to wear certain clothes. And so really it's about trying to break out of that and see ourselves with new eyes. And that's hard, because I think most of us look in the mirror and see our flaws, so we don't see the good parts.
Yeah, we're very worried. I know myself, and this is something I always struggle with. What does the other person see when they look at me? Mm-hmm. As opposed to being comfortable with the fact, what does the Father see when he looks at me?
Right.
You know, and that's because it's easier to worry about the person in front of you, because you can see them, touch them, you can see the reaction. But unless you have a relationship with the Father, you'll never feel that love. You'll never know that reassurance. And I think that's what you do throughout the whole book, is that each practice, each moment of reflection, you're always turning towards, you know, keep your focus in that relationship that is the primary one, even in this practice of how you eat or in that relationship with food.
Yeah, and I think that when we do that, it makes us, you know, we do tend to focus more on gratitude and our blessings, and, you know, that becomes an obvious way that we kind of change things around, is when we start being really aware of how blessed we are to have, you know, this body that can do the things it does, even if it's a couple pounds more, 5 pounds more than I want it to be, you know, and even now I find, like, you know, just last week I think it was that, you know, I'd put on a few pounds, the holidays, the whole thing, and, you know, starting to think like, oh, you know, I need to, like I said, read my book again. And then I thought, and for me, this is kind of a breakthrough thing, like it shows that the book has changed me, is that I kind of thought to myself, you know what, I'm the 5 pounds does not make me a different person. It doesn't mean I'm not good enough. It doesn't mean I'm not successful enough, or if I get to that, you know, if only, if we constantly live in that if only sort of frame of mind, I'm okay. God is, you know, the more important thing is, like you're saying, how does God see me, and what am I doing with my life to please God and to be in relationship with God? And if we make that more of the focus, that other stuff starts to become less important. I think it sort of loses its stranglehold on us.
Well, I think we're all seeing commercials right now, if we watch any type of television, of those people who will show us their 50 pounds. Here I was, 50 pounds heavier, and now I can have them deliver my food to me. And I can just sit down and I don't have to think, and then I can be 50 pounds lighter. And I don't know very many people that, you know, we end up with this yo-yo because there isn't that consistency. There's something missing in when we do have those ups and those downs and those peaks and those valleys, and it would be so much easier just to have somebody else do all the thinking.
Yes. And, you know, if you talk, like, if you look at some of those stories from the book, the woman who, Barbara, who goes to Overeaters Anonymous, who really felt she had a true eating addiction and lost 100 pounds and then gained 100 pounds just back just as quickly, or there's another woman, Mercy, who ended up having stomach surgery, but said, you know, even though that was her last resort, she still has to work hard every day to stay, you know, where she is. But most of those people who have gotten to where they feel like they're healthy now, they said the key to it was that they had to incorporate prayer, that it didn't work if they didn't pray and really become aware and mindful. And, you know, a lot of people use that term mindful and we think Eastern, but that's ours too. I mean, you know, we could claim that as well. I say it's sort of like God is in the details, that we're aware of God's, you know, presence even when we're having a simple meal, or that we look for God's presence in our life even in those simple things. Like you're saying, sort of bringing prayer into, so life becomes a prayer. And so I think that, you know, that connection to God is critical, because otherwise these diets are just these attempts, you know, we try one fad and another fad and another fad, and it's just this constant attempt to become somebody else, to become somebody that we think will be better. And then, as you're saying, we end up yo-yo dieting because you lose the 5 pounds or the 10 pounds and realize you're still the same person. Mm-hmm. Because it was never really about the weight; it was about something else. It was, and usually it's something deeper, like a love and acceptance and God, and something that's, you know, more on a soul level, not on that physical, you know, outside level.
Well, Mary, in your book, Cravings, you know, you mentioned not only all the wonderful chapters and the richness is found in each, but in the appendix, again, you do give us that 10-step plan to saner, mindful eating, which I think is tremendously helpful. But then you also, the recommendations, you know, go on a retreat. And the grocery store field trip. I like that one. I incorporated that one right away after I got the book.
Well, good. I'm so glad you did that. I was trying to think of things that, again, were not just all prayer-focused and not just all diet-focused. Again, trying to weave them together. And sometimes it is just the, you know, the simple practical thing of, like, how do I shop when I go to the grocery store? Or how did I stock my pantry this week? And then other times, you know, the retreat, which is, you know, so critical. I can feel it when I haven't been on retreat in a while that I really need that time to sort of get away and refocus my thoughts and just spend time alone with God and myself and sort of see where I am. And I think that sort of nourishes us in a different way and helps us have strength then for the everyday stuff. So I hope people can use those exercises. And there's that the one, I can't remember now if it's the chapter or in the appendix, where I tell people to eat a meal and eat it like an Italian. Eat it with gusto and don't have any guilt. So that's a fun exercise. We actually get to eat like a really great meal. So,
and it's that importance, too, of moving. Mm-hmm. I mean, to get ourselves up and to, even as you said, even if it's just to walk.
Right. Yes. And that's the thing. You know, we can say we have to take time for prayer. So if you can't figure out, well, where am I going to pray and do the exercise, then put them together and you can, you know, do a meditative walk or say the rosary while you're exercising. I know lots of people who can do the rosary while they exercise. I have a challenge with that. I have to find a different way. But some people are really good at that. And I actually cover a lot of that in my other book, which came out almost at the same time as Cravings, called Everyday Divine. And I say that the two kind of complement each other, because that aspect of bringing prayer into everyday life, pray without ceasing, was sort of the impetus behind that book. And it talks about weaving prayer into your exercise, into commuting, into, there's also a section on cooking and that. But again, that same attitude of bringing prayer to where you are, that it's not always that you have to be in church, although we have to have that mass time and devoted prayer time some of the time. But if we can bring the prayer out into our everyday life, where we think we're so busy we don't have time for it, it can really change our life, I think, if we start to look at things with the eyes of prayer.
Now, Mary, why is it that we're, this idea of blending our ritual meal type of activities with our prayer is so much easier for us during Lent?
I definitely find that. I'm glad that you said that, because it is. I can fast during Lent, and I can give up sweets during Lent, and then Lent is over, and I think, I did really well, I'm going to continue this after Lent. And I never I don't make it, like, past Wednesday.
I know, that the Easter basket comes along and blows me up.
I know. And even last year I did, because I'm a vegetarian, so on Fridays I would tend to go vegan, because giving up meat isn't a sacrifice for me. So last year I was trying to fast on Fridays, because I know someone else who does that, and they fast every Friday, not just during Lent. And I thought, that's a really nice practice. And so it was really working, and I was trying to pray, you know, and really use that time to pray for other people's intentions and focus on other people instead of myself and what was I going to eat for lunch. And I thought it was such a powerful thing. I was going to do it after Lent was over. I did not get through half day that first Friday. And I think it was because after Lent was over, I didn't maintain that deep spiritual practice, because it was sort of like, well, Lent's done, and I'm going to fast today, and yeah, I'm going to pray, but I didn't make that extra effort, and so then it's just a diet then, and it doesn't work. Then it was just like, well, I'm starving myself. Why am I not eating lunch today? I'm going to eat lunch. So I think that Lent, first of all, we're in that season. Our whole church is doing it together, so we do have that community support, that we're all kind of going through the season together. We're all sacrificing. But again, there's, you know, we have those three pillars, you know, prayer and fasting and almsgiving, and they really are they're the three together, because they need each other. So again, fasting doesn't work without prayer, and prayer really needs fasting and charity at some point to sort of flesh it out. So I think Lent is my favorite time of year. So I really love the whole way we kind of soak ourselves in our faith, you know, our faith in a different way, and really want to get closer to God, I think. And I think that makes it easier to give things up because we're so focused on God. It's not sort of a peripheral thing, but it's at the heart of what we're doing.
Even those times when we feast, you point out that we can make those very special encounters with that practice that we've engaged in by doing different things. I mean, making them seasonally. Like you gave us recipes to do for different feast days.
Right. And our faith is so great that way because we have so many different food-related things to our feast days, even if it's, you know, to make a special, you know, bread on the Feast of St. Lucy, you know, in Advent, or whatever it's going to be, King's Cake, you know, during the time leading up to Lent. So we have all these amazing kind of connections between our food and our faith ritual, you know, these rituals that go with the different seasons of the year. Brother Victor, who wrote the many different monastery cookbooks, I've interviewed him for Cravings. You know, he has a book that focuses only on the sacred seasons. And so if you go through his book, for example, he gives you different foods that you would cook at different times of year based on the church seasons of the year and the feasts. So there really is this beautiful built-in connection to, and, you know, you can, again, look at different ethnic feast days, like whether it's Our Lady of Guadalupe or whatever the different feasts are from different cultures, and incorporate some of those things. You know, for me, St. Joseph's Day comes with St. Joseph's pastry, which is one of my favorite things. So, you know, we have these fun ways, really, to incorporate food, and meaningful ways, too, to bring that into our faith practices. And so, again, it's a celebration. I try to tell people that Cravings is actually really a celebration of food and how we can reach a place where food is something we can enjoy without it really controlling us.
Well, Mary, if you haven't gotten the impression that I love Cravings, I hope you have it now. It is a craving I don't mind having. How's that?
That's great.
It is absolutely, it's wonderful. It's right up there. People who listen know that I also love Walking Together, your book on spiritual friendship. I think that's a must, and everyone I know that's read it has found that to be so edifying. And I think, I know they'll find that with Cravings as well. It's the book I'm passing out to all, not only my girlfriends, but all my friends, because I think it's that good.
Thank you.
I think it's just another wonderful guide in Catholic spirituality that you're giving us, Mary.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so glad.
With Mary DeTour's post, we've gone inside the pages of Cravings, A Catholic Wrestles with Food, Self-Image, and God. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to AveMariaPress.com, the website for its publisher, Ave Maria Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.